Hello and welcome to The Irishman, the daily podcast where I watch 1 minute of the 3.5 hour 2019 Netflix movie The Irishman and talk about it. I'm Ryan Simmons and today is Thursday, January 28th. My guest today is writer and comedian Josh Gondelman. Josh, hi. Thank you so much for doing this.
Hello, thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, have you... I usually start these things by asking if people have actually seen the movie. Have you subjected yourself to all 3.5 hours of the movie?
I have not.
You have not. Okay. So do you know?
I don't watch a lot of movies.
You don't watch a lot of movies.
This one happened when it came out. My wife and her family, I was visiting my wife and her, we live together.
Right.
That's how marriage often works.
Yeah, that's usually the case.
We were visiting my wife's family for Thanksgiving in 2019. And I had to leave to go do stand up like across the country. And they watched it the night after I left. And then once, now that my wife has seen it, it just feels tricky to set aside 3.5 hours to watch a movie that just doesn't seem like how I want to spend 3.5 hours by myself.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. That was for me. There's certain movies I think that fall through the cracks like that because it's like, well, Braveheart came out 30 years ago, but it's really long. Am I going to sit down on a random afternoon and just watch Braveheart just to say that I've seen Braveheart? Like,
there's other movies too that it feels like once you miss the moment, there's like almost no reason to watch them. Like, I've never seen Avatar, but not having seen it in the theaters in whenever 2008, 2009, it just feels like, well, seeing it now is not seeing it.
Right. Yeah. No, you've missed. Part of it is the whole zeitgeist, the whole cultural collective thing is just dissolved.
And once you see something that was like a technological breakthrough, like 11, 12 years after that breakthrough has been made, then you're just like it's almost like this is like a bad example, but it's like if you listen to like all the music from 1980 through 2020, right?
Right.
Like if you're familiar with that and then you hear early Led Zeppelin and then the music that predated Led Zeppelin, you know, the rock and roll, early rock and roll music that was kind of the template for what they adapted or ripped off, however you want to say it.
Right.
That earlier music doesn't seem as bracing and breathtaking in this original.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to be impressed by Avatar when there's been like 4 Harry Potter movies that have come out since then that like blew it out of the water in terms of like special effects and all of that stuff. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah, this has been a pretty very silly and Sisyphean feat for me, and I kind of regret doing it, which is a contrast to your podcast, which is just like injecting positivity into the world, which I really like. I really appreciate
that.
Yeah,
it's been so fun to do. It was conceived as a different kind of show. It was conceived as kind of a panel quiz show with the same thrust. The show's called Make My Day, and the premise is it's a game show where the contestants try to cheer me up.
Right.
But when kind of lockdown, quarantine, like pandemic conditions happen, that's right when we're about to launch. So instead, we just do it generally one-on-one with a guest. So the guest always wins.
Right.
And that's now part of the thing.
I think that's wonderful. It's such a wonderful inverse to this, which was I started it in January as like a goof, and then lockdown happened. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. It just felt so stupid in the face of everything. So I took a little hiatus. And then after a while, I was like, you know, I think maybe just talking into a microphone for 15 minutes and doing this very stupid thing is good therapy. And it ended up working out really well. But now I'm feeling this like insane urge to finish it. Like I feel guilty starting another project without finishing this goof project. I'm very bad at starting projects and then not finishing them, especially publicly. So now I feel like I've really tied this albatross around my neck, and I've cursed myself to finish this way too long movie.
This is the one you've committed to. You're like, this one is too long. It's too much work. And this is what I've hitched my wagon.
Hitched the wagon to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that when it's done, I'm going to feel really good. I'm going to feel like $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be great.
It's going to be great. But I know
you're going to be like an old man.
I'm going to be so, then.
And you'll have to use de-aging effects. I have to use my own de-aging technology.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Make my voice sound younger. Mm-hmm. But yeah, part of the issue I'm dealing with also is that everyone, and I mentioned this yesterday, I was speaking to Seth Rosenthal, my coworker at Secret Base, and mentioned that like everyone has forgotten about this movie. No one has, like, after last March when it didn't win any of the Oscars, everyone has completely forgotten about it. So now I feel like on this little island of like, hey, remember that too long movie everyone was goofing on? Well, I'm still doing it, still watching it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I love that.
Oh, thanks.
Right.
So what do you know about the, like, I want to set up this totally out of context minute for you as best I can and as quickly as I can. But what do you know about the story of The Irishman?
So I know the Irishman's name is Frank. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Frank Sheeran.
And he works for and or is enemies with Jimmy Hoffa.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know anything about this movie or the Jimmy Hoffa story.
Okay.
I don't know about the enemy. That must not have happened yet. I don't know how
it also might not happen at any point.
Okay, that's also true. What I've seen so far is that, yes, Frank Sheeran is Jimmy Hoffa's body man.
Right.
The scene that we're in right now is he's doing a rally, some sort of actually very Trumpian, I have to say, rally at a hotel in Florida, in Miami, that I think the union helped develop, that he helped develop with like union money.
Okay.
Illegally. And he is feeling some pressure because President Kennedy and Kennedy's brother, who's the assistant or the attorney general at the time, are coming after Hoffa rightly for corruption. And Hoffa is upset about that. He also thinks
I would be too.
He also thinks it's a purposeful distraction from the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was a big disaster. So, which I think is some hubris to think that the president is coming after you. But we've seen that might truly be the case because, well.
Right. It does seem like going after Jimmy Hoffa for corruption is it also, again, this is my minimal understanding of this specific story, but it does feel like, and knowing the kind of bent that this movie has from what I've heard, is that it does feel like a moderately, like a not super pro union movie about a union leader, which
right.
is a funny way to do that. So it does seem like they're like extrapolating from there. It does seem like prosecuting Jimmy Hoffa very publicly and aggressively, it might be like a way to go after unions as well as like his specific corruption in the way that like, who cares how few taxes Al Capone paid, right?
Right.
But this is like the problem where like the financial corruption is like worse than the other stuff about the guy. Where with Al Capone, it was like the inverse, where it was like, oh, they got him for who cares.
Right, yeah, exactly. Okay, so I think, are you ready to watch it? One thing I'll say before we start very quickly is that a minute goes by very fast. And there's a very good chance that almost nothing happens and we'll have very little to talk about at the other side. So I'm just mentally preparing you for that.
I'm ready for that.
Okay, great. I'm going to start the timer and the minute right now.
You know the operative word I'm talking about here.
Okay, so this is more of the rally.
And it works. It works for all of us. And works
Frank,
for our friend here, Frank Fitzsimmons.
I'm going to say I'm getting kind of a vibe from De Niro's character that I've seen from Trump cabinet members, where he's sort of watching the rally happen, but is a little unhappy with how it's going.
Yeah, he seems a little flustered. Jimmy Hoffa, I did not realize, was such an animated public speaker.
Very animated, yeah. It's hard to know how much of that was actually Hoffa and how much was Pacino. Oh, I love that dance. Look at that little dance.
That was, the dance was maybe the Trumpiest part. It's like the way
he's
when
done that exact move.
And Trump does his own little thing.
You know, I felt they liked Fitz. No two ways about it.
Yeah, well, you gave Fitz some buildup. I hope he deserves it.
Oh, boy. And that's it.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, a minute. Not a whole lot of time. But that was,
I think we got to see some stuff. He shouted out the other guy named Frank.
Yep.
Too many Franks.
Too many Franks, but now they're referring to him as Fitz immediately, just to help clarify.
But which is also a pretty Irish, right? That's like a nickname that I've known many Irish people to have.
Fitz, yes.
Yeah. So there's another guy named Frank, who everyone calls Fitz, who's not the Irishman.
He's just an Irishman. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then we're ending on this interesting thing. There's been some interesting... And I don't know if this comes back maybe later in the movie, which is quite literally, because of my little time dilation here, months away. But yeah. I hope there's a little explanation here. Frank stays in the hotel rooms with Jimmy Hoffa.
Okay.
He stays in the living room because then he doesn't have to register his name at another room in the hotel. And we've seen these sort of moments where they have the almost pillow talk. Like he's getting his pajamas ready and he's sort of having this like intimate moment with Jimmy Hoffa, who I guess is like in the bathroom brushing his teeth or whatever.
Yeah. This is a very intimate relationship.
Yeah.
I wonder though, I mean like the paradigmatic bodyguard relationship is the bodyguard, right? That's like what I think of when I think of a bodyguard on screen. And you're like, oh, their relationship becomes
super very intimate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But I can imagine that if you're a person who is a known figure that is in danger, but needs, but is like, and he has a kind of personal warmth to you, this becomes a very intimate relationship.
It can't not, right? I feel like if these people are around you all day, more than your own family, they do sort of become family. Oh, maybe that's got to be a little thematic thing we're getting into here.
Well, I think that happens the other way. That is something I know about this movie, is that when you
the relationship said that, breaks down a little bit,
or that this relationship caught his closeness, the Irishman Frank,
sure,
his Frank Sharon's relationship to Jimmy Hoffa causes him to drift from his own family.
Oh, okay, Hoffa. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have seen a little bit of his daughter, Peggy, whose name I constantly have to look up because I can't remember it, because it's been literal weeks since the last time I've heard it. Mm-hmm. She's like 9 or 10, I think, right now, and giving him some side eye. In yesterday's episode, he was packing a gun, and she saw the gun, and she was like, where are you going? What are you doing with that gun? And he was giving her the whole like, daddy's got to work thing, which is like an old staple of the mob movies.
And
right?
Then he flexes his arm and his cast breaks off.
Yeah, exactly.
That is, Emmy Blotnick has such a great stand-up bit about The Rock. And she talks about that moment, which is like truly a breathtaking moment in cinema.
Yeah.
In Fast and Furious 6.
I think. Yeah.
He says, daddy's got to go. Like, he's in the hospital and he sees his friends in trouble on TV and says, daddy's going to go to work, and just flexes. And the cast bursts off his arm.
Yep.
Ugh.
Also all CG, just like the Irishman. It was all CG. CG cast.
And his arms.
And the whole of The Rock, actually.
He's got skinny little arms. Yeah. Tiny neck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rock is a character played by Andy Serkis.
Right, yeah. He's
in a mocap suit.
A guy in a mocap suit. These union meetings are really being portrayed. This is sort of the last thing that I want to touch on,
and then let's do it.
I think that's it. They're really, I hate to use this word again, but they're sort of rather Trumpian, which is not how I know union rallies to be.
Sure.
This is like you said, it's sort of clouding what we know of a union today with perhaps they used to be. The Teamsters in particular, right?
Right.
It's all very confusing to me.
It's playing up the a strain that existed, right, within union workers of like organized crime affiliation, without contextualizing the broader labor movement, which seems like a little cynical.
Sure.
As a filmmaking, and also, I mean, not for me to tell Martin Scorsese how to make a 3.5-hour movie.
That I've been doing it for months, so please go ahead.
And to make it longer. But it does feel like even in mob movies, right, that are just mob movies, you contrast the dark side of the mob with the social function that it's ostensibly serving, right? Like, and I feel like to not do that with the idea of like organized labor is both... like a net, not a net evil. I think that's a little much, but I think it's like
a missed opportunity. Maybe?
A missed opportunity. I think there's good that can be done by showing just like the importance of organized labor, especially in a society where like unions are at a time in history where unions have been weakened from where they once were, even to protect people from just like basic, you know, to offer basic protections from your employers and health conditions and stuff. I think like, so there's that, like the general social thing. And just from a storytelling point, storytelling point of view, where like, have you seen Gaudi?
I have not seen Gaudi. I haven't. That was the Movie Pass movie, right?
Yep. Okay. Yes. Movie Pass funded it. They were like, this is how we're going to let people into the movies for free. And then we're going to spend money to make a movie. Right. And then everyone will see it for free and we'll be billionaires.
Right. Yeah. It's can't fail. It's perfect logic.
It was very bad. Very, very bad.
Sure.
But the problem is understating how many problems there are. But a big problem with it is that it starts from the point of view of like, you know how the mob fucking rules?
Right.
Like there's like one small scene of lip service paid to like John Travolta helping an old lady cross the street or something and like keeping someone's boxing gym open. But it doesn't go to like the Goodfellas lengths to be like, this is what appealed to me about the mob. And this is what
it actually what ended up being.
Yes, and sure. This is what it was. Or this and this is what I saw them doing in my community. And this is why I admired these men. And then it turns out that to wield this power and to operate this kind of like para government, like, you know what I mean? Like a shadow local government,
sure,
that makes the rules and has its own economy. This is what it takes to keep that running. And Gaudi does not do that.
Right.
They're just like, hey, the mob is very cool, right? But sometimes it goes wrong.
Sometimes it goes sideways. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just doesn't do the work. And I feel like here doing the work of portraying like the actual positive elements of organized labor, which is the vast majority of it, I would say, instead of just going to be like, okay, so unions, what do you need to know? They work with the mob. Okay, that's it.
They're really good for laundering money sometimes.
Great for laundering. Yeah. Exactly.
If you're in the right place.
Mm-hmm. They want you to kill. Does that do it?
Yeah. They're like angry. They're so angry. Look at them.
If you were playing Taboo and you were describing labor unions by like what happens here,
right?
People wouldn't get it.
No.
You know what I mean? You're like, bodyguard. gesticulation.
Right.
What is this?
Yeah, it's been an issue not having, and I don't know if this is my fault as just a not a well-read person, or if it's just maybe the state of the education where I came from, but I didn't know really any of the true life details of this story when I started the movie, which is sort of helping to cloud some of that stuff for me, you know.
For sure.
The movie kind of makes you feel like if you're not old or you're not well versed in this period of American history, some stuff is sort of getting tossed out here that is a little lost on me, which makes me feel a little stupid.
I think though that's not your fault.
Good. Because thanks.
No problem. I just think like the idea that like first of all, again, I don't think the life of Jimmy Hoffa, despite there being already a movie about the life of Jimmy Hoffa, is like so back of the hand familiar to most people that like when you watch this, people go, right, oh, you're hitting the beats of Jimmy Hoffa's life.
Oh, those right. Classic, that guy. Yeah.
The classic, like, right. It's not like Steve Jobs, who was like chronicled endlessly during his life. And then two films came out after his death. And when you watch them, you're like, oh, yeah, that's the Steve Jobs I know.
Right.
This, I don't think Jimmy Hoffa is like that to people who aren't like, who like, you never saw Frank Sinatra live.
Right,
say.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm looking really forward to being educated on this over the next, I think, year.
Mm-hmm.
I've done.
So you,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was about to ask. So you've done an hour 13 now?
Yeah, so that's what, 73 episodes, 73 yeah. minutes.
Wow.
The whole project is 210 minutes. It's exactly 3.5
hours
long.
About a third in.
I'm about a third of the way through. Yeah. This should take me to If I do it consistently, maybe the middle of the summer.
Yeah, another 140 year. Days.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's awful.
It sounds rigorous.
It's a little rigorous. I had been, it was a little bit of a secret at first, but the secret was that I was banking a week's worth of episodes in one right. sit down. So that was sort of the way to do it. But sitting down and only watching even 5 minutes of a movie at a time once a week, it's way more mentally draining than I thought, which is why, like I said before, I really appreciate you coming and like helping lift the load a little bit here.
Incredible. Thanks for having me. I was going to ask you, do you know if have your conversations been similar, or do you find that like every minute provokes its own unique conversation?
If something worth noting happens in the minute, and I have to say I've really had to dig in certain minutes, then yeah. it kind of flows, especially when I'm with Lilith. When I'm by myself, I'm really just grasping at straws. And but there have been whole minutes where it's like, okay, he just drove his car around the building casing the joint for 60 yep. seconds, and it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe this podcast was a bad idea. But I try to keep the episodes to be like maximum 20 minutes long, so that if sure. people, you know, if I really whiff it on one day, then it's like, okay, well, I hope I didn't waste too much of your time.
Sure. Well, cool. Well, thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for doing it. I really appreciate it. And I hope everyone listens to your podcast and watches your TV show and all the incredible things that you're doing.
Thank you so much.
It was an honor to have you on.